My name is Mireya Loza. It's the 29th of July, 2008. I'm here in Salem, Oregon, recording an interview for the Bracero History Project. I'm interviewing Patricia Zahara Elling. Patricia Zahara Elling. Patricia, when were you born?
March the 8th. 1929.
Where were you born?
Here in Salem, Oregon. Mm-hmm. And I was born in the hospital here. Mm-hmm.
What did your parents do for a living?
Okay, my father was a farmer out in the Hazel Green area, north of Salem, and he raised just about anything you can think of. During the Bracero program, it was more of the seed crops, like the beet seed, sugar beet seed, and it was for seed. Onion seeds, parsnip seeds, and he also had strawberries at that time. However, I don't remember the Braceros working in the strawberries. Mm-hmm. Definitely I can remember lots because I worked with them and the other girls in the neighborhood did. Most of the boys were gone in the service, and actually there was one incident that I'll never forget, because some of the neighbors in the area out there were kind of skeptical about the Mexicans being out there working with the young girls, or the younger girls. And when we were working in the beet seed, we would cut them with the machetes, cut the big stalks. You know, they grow high, and we'd cut off the stalks and throw them in piles to thresh them later, which was all done by hand at that point. And some of the women thought, surely we'd get our heads cut off or something. Which was really hilarious, you know. Do you want me to tell more about the braceros?
Yeah, as much as you can remember,
okay.
And then I'll ask you to elaborate.
I do recall that, I guess, there were two other farm people that were around my parents' place, and the three of those fellows usually farmed together using the same equipment and the help they could get. And I think we had a backyard that was somewhat like this. My mother was a real horticulturalist and grew all kinds of flowers. And there was real good shade, so they would always come and eat lunch at our backyard. And at one point, I had gotten a lot of records, I think from a pen pal that I had down near Morelia in Mexico. And I was trying to figure out some of the words on the records that he had sent me. I could get some, but I couldn't get all of them. And so I usually would play music for the guys that were having their lunch, and some of them would sit and write the words out for me so that I'd have, you know, the complete words to them. It's just like English, you know, when you hear some of these being sung, you do not understand every word. So that was great, and they'd just had a real good time, you know, during their noon hour, and they sang all the time when we were working. It was really, really fun, you know, working with them. And I thought, over about 3 years, I think, I'm trying to think, about 3 years probably that they came and worked on the farm. And I learned more Spanish from them than I probably ever did in high school. I went on in college and took it in college too. It was fabulous having the opportunity, you know, to talk and use it and increase vocabulary. That was super. And I was about the only one in the whole area that knew any Spanish. So I was the one. My dad was, like you are, real dark hair. He was Hungarian, German, and French, I think. And the fellows would always go to him to find out because they thought he should be able to speak Spanish. And he'd say, you know, point over there to this blonde, which they thought, wow, I can't believe this. But I got better with it as it went on. But just to be able to communicate a little in the beginning was really fun. I think I was probably first year in high school, having first year Spanish. But I picked up a lot. And then I had the pen pal in Mexico, and we wrote all the time. And it was through a Spanish club that I had in high school. And about that time, my mom and I joined a group down at the YMCA, and they had a man from Nicaragua, Rolando Porras, I remember his name. Don't remember why he was in the area, but he was teaching these classes. And in that group were about five or six women who were college graduates, and they're about my mom's age. And I think I told the other fellow that when I talked to him on the phone. In that group, some knew quite a bit of Spanish and some were learning and so forth. We did that for a year, I think, through the winter. And then the next year, when the braceros came, a group of the older women who had been, I think, probably Spanish majors in high school, got this little group together, and they included me with them to go teach English to the braceros. We went two times a week in the evenings, and I can remember using the Sears catalog a lot to get pictures of things, because some of the Mexicans, well, they were from Mexico, but they were Indians who did not speak Spanish. And they would, you know, they would relate to the picture well, and you could give them the Spanish and the English, or the ones that spoke Spanish, we'd try and stress the English. And we all laughed. Some of those ladies were really good with their Spanish. One of them, Bobby Berg, Marguerite Berg, I think she was part Spanish, and she ended up teaching, I think she taught some literature classes at Willamette University, some of the Spanish literature classes there at one point. And so I was kind of the novice in the group, you know, at that time. But that was a great experience. And those guys were really anxious to learn. Just, you know, it was amazing.
Would you teach some of the Mexicans who were Indians who didn't speak Spanish, would you teach them Spanish as well?
If we happened, I can't remember how we were strung out at tables and there'd be a group. Mm-hmm. So you would soon find out if somebody couldn't speak Spanish, you know, right off. So I think probably some of the other men would try and help too if they had somebody like that in their group. And as I recall, they'd get the English and the Spanish. That might have been really confusing to them, I don't know. But and I have no idea what language, you know, or what group I was familiar with the Tarascans when we were down there later. I don't know what they would have been, the ones who were here in the Bracero program. Mm-hmm. We'd visit some about where they were from, with the limited, you know, vocabulary at that time. And I think we'd sing songs, but the main point of going was to do the English and give them enough so that if they went shopping, they could ask for certain things. And I do recall that 1 year, maybe 2 years, they were housed out at the fairgrounds, the state fairgrounds here in Salem. Mm-hmm. And I can remember being out there in some big buildings because we would spread out the tables where they'd meet. And it was just optional whether they wanted to come, but it seemed like most anyone that was there wanted to come and learn some English, you know. And I do remember a year or two that they housed them at the airport where the National Guard had barracks, and it seemed like that was a little crowded, but I don't remember that well. So they housed them at those two different areas here. And the farmers would go in the morning and get as many as they needed. And as I say, out there, where I lived, the farms were probably around 50 acres. And they were more specialized, like the fruits and the seed crops. Eventually, my dad got into orchards, primarily apples, peaches and pears, some prunes too, I shouldn't forget those. But by that time, they were not bringing braceros up here. We got platoons to work in the strawberries, and that's when the kids could go out and work. Which now they can't, you know, in Oregon. I don't know how it is where you're from. But they have to be the child of the person that owns a farm to work on the farm, unless they're over 16, I guess. 16 or 17, I think they can go work. And a lot of people think that's a big mistake, that they've done away with that, because the kids are sitting around and they can't really get too many jobs doing anything when they're smaller. But that's the law. And let's see, what else can I ask me some questions?
Did you have any siblings that also experienced the same kind of things you did? How many siblings did you have?
One brother. Mm-hmm. He was gone to the war. Yeah, he was in the Philippines for a long time. And actually, he went in about the time the war was ending. I think he went in 43, 44. I was trying to think. He must have gone in 44. Yeah, 44 it would have been.
And can you describe to me a little, when was the first time that you noticed these men were around you? Was it the first time that your father brought them in from to the farm? Did you perceive them in a town before you perceived them in your town or in the ranch?
Well, I think living out on the farm, we weren't in town much until, well, you know, I don't remember ever seeing them. Probably did, but I don't remember. I had some real good friends, the Aguilars, that lived in Salem, and I went to high school with them. Mm-hmm. And I used to go, they'd have parties with singing and dancing and so forth, and I used to get invited to their parties. So, you know, if I saw a Mexican, I didn't think twice about it. And also, I can remember a man, and I'm not sure, he might have been here on the Bracero program, and we met him at that time, I think probably was the case, and he was, seemed like one of the older ones, maybe 10 years younger than my parents, and he would stop by, I think 4 or 5 years, he stopped by to see them, and he was going to Washington, I think. Now, whether he went up there to work, I can't remember, because some of the time I wasn't home then when he'd stop, and I don't remember his name even. Mm-hmm. But, you know, my dad would say, so-and-so stopped by on his way north, maybe Yakima or somewhere.
Why did your father decide to employ braceros? Do you know? Or were you too young?
Well, I'll tell you. There weren't people to work in the fields. Mm-hmm. You couldn't get anybody that was responsible, except there were a few others. There was a girl that lived on the farm next to us, and her dad was one that worked together. The other farmer, they didn't have kids. So with those three farms, it was just the two girls. And to go to town and get help was, people just didn't want to work. I mean, the ones that probably should have been working wouldn't come out and work. And I can tell you a lot of situations with the strawberries. Now, I don't know quite, we raised strawberries for a long time because I can remember different varieties, starting with the Marshalls. That's a real old berry, old timer. That was really good. But when we had to resort to the kids then, that could go on platoons, could meet a bus, and we'd take them out on a bus and come back. And this would have been later, I'm thinking now, because my husband even drove a platoon bus for a while, and I drove one part of the time. I hated it. But I was field bossing then. And that was probably when I was in college. But they'd get men to come out, and they'd stay and work long enough so they'd cash in their tickets and walk back to town and probably spend it on wine in most cases. Some of them would have their bottles that they'd bring when they came to work. And you probably knew they weren't going to stay all day long. So the people that think that, you know, we were taking jobs away from anybody here, if the guys who were all in the service had been here, you know, we would have had a lot of the young guys that would have been working, at least the farm type. So that's why, I mean, to get the harvest done, that was a lifesaver.
Around how many years do you remember the braceros being here?
Well,
you mentioned that they came in the 1940s here to Salem.
Yeah, that's what I remember. About 44, 45, 46, 47. Those years for sure. And You know, after I started to college, I can't recall, can't remember when we stopped getting them. Mm-hmm. But it seemed like it wasn't a long period of time. But I just can't, you know, I wish now that I'd, you know, I may have some old diaries here somewhere that would have some things. I never kept diaries too well, but I would, you know, every week or so write something. Really, and I might check some of those out, because I know where a couple are. And my mom, I've got a couple of hers too. That might help.
Really, it would. Definitely. Can you describe a little bit the ranch so that I can understand the landscape of the ranch? And where did these braceros sleep and where did they eat?
Okay, they slept and ate in the barracks, like at the airport, mm-hmm. or at the fairgrounds. Okay. That's where they got their breakfast and their evening meal. And I think that they must have had their lunches packed mm-hmm. by whoever was housing them. And that... probably a government program, mm-hmm. and they'd bring their sack lunches, and we'd always fix coffee and you know, have water and whatever, tea, I don't know, but the coffee anyway, I can remember that, and always had water for them, and they, you know, always had a place to wash up and so forth. But our farm was excellent soil. It was right up from an area called Lake Labiche, which was beaver dam soil that was row crops. You know, you know what I mean? Like the celery and the lettuce and all those. The crops were raised, carrots and things for the markets. And during the war, they shipped all the Japanese out to Tule Lake, basically, and that left all that good ground down there that turned into just onions, Lake Labiche onions, they call them, because the Japanese were gone and nobody was there to do those crops. And
did the Japanese leave from one day to another? They just picked them up and they
were gone? Yeah, practically. It was terrible. We had a lot of good friends that were shipped out on the train. Just bango, you know. Just like a concentration camp, mm-hmm. almost. at least, you know, looking back, they don't say too much about it. Not too many came back here. There were two families that owned a lot of the good soil, had farms there that they owned. A lot of them rented or lived there as caretakers and worked. So the ones that didn't own land did not come back. They decided life was easier somewhere else, and they stayed and got like hotels in San Francisco, hotels in Seattle. Some of them went to Idaho to camps and just stayed in different places like that. There are a couple of the well-known families that did come back to Salem, but you know, half of them were gone. And they got a little money from the government years later, after most of the ones from my generation, their parents had died, so they didn't get any money. They were gone already. Their kids got, I think, $25,000 for the experience. But
and those lands were left unattended?
Well, some of the big onion growers bought it. One owned some of it, and some of them farmed, kept the land going for the Japanese that owned. They kind of took care of it so they could come back to something. It's just now turned into onions, which I guess is a pretty good crop most of the time, but real different. Anyway, these farms where I grew up were just upland from that soil. And it's called Willamette soil. It's one of the best soils anywhere here in the valley for growing things. And that's why the strawberries and the blueberries and all the fruit crops and things. That's a big area north of Salem. It's real good for that. And our place was 51 acres, I guess, when I had it surveyed when we sold it finally. My dad always thought it was 52 because that's what, when he bought the acreage, it ended up 52. Well, somewhere along the line, it became 51, I guess. And it was all flat farmland, you know, and no rocks or anything. Excellent soil. Completely different than out here where I live. This is kind of a red clay soil. It does grow flowers and trees and things well if you give it a lot of water. But out there, at that time, we did very little irrigating, like the beet seeds and all the seed crops. Didn't have to irrigate those at all. We did eventually, I think, start irrigating some strawberries and then the orchards and things. Now they irrigate, do a lot of irrigation with that. But that's basically, you know, it's all pretty flat land out there. And it's now just on the other side of the road that separates what can be sold off as housing and farmland. And our farm was right across the road. It's the first soil across the road that's supposed to be exclusive farm use. But that isn't even quite the case in some cases, I guess. The people that we sold our farm to have a market on the other side of the road that's exclusive farm, and also, you know, pumpkin patches and a huge graveled parking lot for the cars at Halloween when they have a corn maze and things. So you kind of wonder about exactly what that exclusive farm use is and who gets to do it and who doesn't.
Where was your house in relation to all of this farmland that you lived on?
We're right on. I had a huge laurel hedge along this gravel road, which has turned into now a main arterial that goes on the east side of Salem. It's called Cordon Road. It was Van Cleve Road when we lived there back when the Braceros came. It was still Van Cleve Road for a long time, because there was a huge farmer that lived north of us, right close to that Lake LaBouche soil. And so it was named after the family, you know, years ago, Van Cleve Road. And then it became 55th Avenue. I don't know quite why an avenue. And then now it's Cordon Road. It's the main arterial that tries to take traffic out of downtown if they're going anywhere coming in from the east or heading north to Portland or Brooks or any of the smaller Woodburn smaller towns north. And our house was not far off the road. We had a big yard, a lot bigger than here. And the property was north of the house, east of the house, south of the house. And our yard went up to the laurel hedge along the road there. So we were pretty much in the middle, had a big irrigation well that was out just almost in the center of the property. Mm-hmm. That really had a lot of water. You could just pump sprinklers all over the place.
When did your father buy that land?
We moved out there when I was 5 years old. I was born in 29. Would that be right? 5, 34? Yeah. And I started first grade out there at Hazel Green School. It was a small two-room schoolhouse. Walked about a mile, mile and a quarter to school. And had a good, good softball team and a good parents' club that would take us all over the country for the ball games and also puppet shows. We were noted for the puppet shows that we put on. So we had an artistic teacher in one room, and the other teacher was musical, but she was she taught the upper grade. She wasn't as artistic, probably, but she was a very good, had two excellent teachers out there. And we made these puppets, and this one would fix the little faces out of the paper mache, and we painted them, and one show we did was Rip Van Winkle. And my dad, I can remember, blew the smoke through a pipe that hooked to a hose that went out in the back of Rip Van Winkle's head and came out in his pipe, you know. We had all kinds of things there and had a lot of fun doing that. Had a lot of fond memories.
Was your high school bigger than that?
Oh, yeah. a bus came out there, and I came into Salem High. It was Salem High then. Now there are, let's see, Salem High, it's North High, there's McNary High, there's West Salem, and there's Sprague, and there's McKay. You know, those are all high schools. Yeah. In fact, I ended up teaching at quite a few of those. I retired from the Salem schools and went to teach part-time at Chemeketa for a long time. And then I got called back to McKay High one Friday afternoon in October, I remember. And they said, could you come and start Monday? And I said, well, I'm still teaching all these Chemeketa classes and night classes primarily, but I was working 2 days a week at a senior center teaching Chemeketa classes. And so I started at McKay, and they got a sub for me for 2 days while I wasn't there. It was a little chaotic. But anyway, so I ended up, I quit Chemeketa then when I got booked into Salem quite a bit. I ended up, the last 7 years I taught in the McKay, and I was at North High where I'd gone to school, and then I retired from Sprague High. That's cross country over here, not too far from here. But
why did your high school have Spanish as a language that students could learn? Were there a lot of Latinos here, Spanish speakers?
No.
Prior to the Braceros?
No. The Aguilars are the only family that I know that were living in the area at the time. But they offered Spanish and Latin out at the Salem High. We had an excellent Spanish teacher. There was hardly any conversation, though. That, you know, it's so hard to get conversation in 50, 55-minute class periods. And if you've got 30 kids in a class, which was about the going rate, by the time you took roll, and you know, you maybe had, you didn't even have a minute and a half per kid. But anyway, so I really, you know, that was one reason I really benefited from being around and hearing the Mexicans and working with them all the time. I'd try and use as much as I could and listen to them and so forth. Then that summer, my first year out of college, when I went to Mexico and saw the volcano erupting, I went with this real good friend whose sister married Rafael Venegas. And we took a bus down.
Rafael was the bracero.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he was a banker in Irapuato, Mexico. Guanajuato. It was Guanajuato was the state. They lived in Irapuato. And we went down on the Greyhound bus all through Arizona and down the highway, Pan American Highway. And that was an experience. But we did all kinds of things, because by then I felt that I could get along pretty well, and we didn't have reservations anywhere. We just went. And I remember on that bus going down the Pan American Highway, something happened to a wheel or an axle, and we were held up several hours. In Thomas and Charlie, have you heard of that? Mm-hmm. It was someplace along the Pan American Highway. It sounded like Thomas and Charlie almost, Thomas and Charlie. But anyway, this one Mexican family, they were sitting, two of them, I think the man and the wife were across the aisle from us, and they got so concerned, the man especially, he just couldn't figure out what we were going to do when we got there. And I told him I had the name of a hotel where we could go. And he was so worried that we wouldn't get a taxi or something. I don't know. I think we must have gotten a taxi. But it was like 10 at night when we got in there. And these big, beautiful carved wooden doors were closed tight. And we pounded and pounded, and finally somebody came. And we got a room there, and then when we went to a little restaurant real close, because we hadn't had anything to eat for quite a while. And and Pauline went, I don't know what she got to eat. I guess maybe she got what I got. And I love the Mexican food, and I like it hot. And there was a counter with just a few people sitting there, and we sat down at this little table. And they brought the food over, and Pauline opens up whatever it is and tries to figure out what it is and to take out anything that looked like a pepper. And they got a kick out of it. And every time she'd bite into something hot, you know, she was, ah! But, it was fun. Anyway, we got out to Irapuato, and we stayed with them for a while, and then we told them we were going down to Morelia and on to Orapan. No, I guess we were at, I don't know where we were first. Anyway, we ended up out at Orapan and getting the horses to go up on the volcano and so forth, and met my pen pal when we were down there. When we came back in, we stopped, and our guide that we'd gotten in Mexico City, we felt he either was getting tired of us, or he didn't, or he was trying to make money on us. Because one place where we stopped, I had the hotel all picked out where we were to go, and he had agreed to all this before we engaged him to take us. And he didn't take us to that hotel, and he told us that it had a fire, so he had to take us to another one. And it was not that we stayed at good hotels. I mean, you know, we just stayed at places that were cheap and adequate. So we knew from walking around town, it was just a little village, and we walked around, and I spotted the hotel where we were supposed to have stayed. And there was nothing wrong with it. So when we headed back to Mexico City, we just told him to leave us off in Morelia at this specific hotel, because we thought he'd pull the same thing again there. And he got a little upset with us when we got there. He just got out, put our baggage out on the sidewalk, and took off. So anyway,
In these cities like Irapuato, did you manage to see any contracting centers, bracero contracting centers? What year did you end up in Irapuato?
1948. I would have been 1 year out of college.
Did you see any of these men trying to sign up for the program over there, or any hustle and bustle around the program in Mexico?
You know, I think I asked Rafael about that, and, you know, I think he had just become disengaged with the whole thing. Mm-hmm. By then, he and Sarah had been married a couple of years, and they had a little girl, Lucia. Lucia was about one. She was just barely walking, and she was tiny. Sarah and Rafael had three girls, ended up with three girls eventually, and then had a little boy who died, I don't know how old he was, but little, and of the lung, whatever it is, it's something that the youngsters die of, a lung disease. I don't know what it's called, but they knew from the beginning there was something wrong. And after he died, Sarah moved back to Salem. Well, she came back on a visit, had three girls with her, and she just stayed. Well, I often thought that was kind of weird, but Sarah ended up having some problems.
Where was Rafael when she came up to Salem?
He was back banking, working in Irapuato. And he wrote to me all the time. And finally, kind of over the years, just got so I heard from him at Christmas time, and I'd always write to him. And actually, you know, I think Sarah had just cut off all contact with him. And over the years, Pauline, who was my good friend, lived in California for years. Mm-hmm. Her husband worked for all kinds of Technicolor and big companies down there. And Pauline ended up having a polio in her 20s after she'd had two kids. And so I would write to her, but I didn't see her often. I saw her after she got over the polio. I was down to visit once, and she was getting mobile again. She had a lot of trouble with muscle transplants, things like that. And over the years, I kept asking her if she knew if Sarah, was in contact with Rafael. Well, she didn't know much about what was going on. And she'd indicated to me at that time that Sarah was getting harder to communicate with. And in fact, Sarah started, you know, kind of hallucinating things. And Pauline couldn't deal with it very well. And she would light into Pauline's husband, for example, when he's a great guy, he's never done anything wrong. But so they just kind of cut off. But then one of the girls, and I think it's Lucia, that is back in Salem and has been for some time now, I think I got her address from Pauline. And I don't know if I sent it to Rafael or if I gave Pauline the address and she got it to Lucia, and Lucia contacted Rafael. anyway, I'm not sure, but I think two of the daughters were in probably close contact. I don't know where the other daughter is even. But I think two of them, for over some years, you know, were communicating. And I don't know, I think maybe one even went down to visit. But I do know that Raphael has died, let's see. And he would have been, he would have been probably later 80s, because I'm going on 80. And he would have been, I would say, 5, 6, 7 years older maybe than I, because Sarah was 2 years or 2+ older. Yeah, I imagine, see, he was getting up there. And so I was glad to hear that, you know, there'd been the contact.
How did Raphael end up dating Sarah? Were there a lot of braceros dating local girls?
I don't know, but I know that there was another girl who was about Sarah's age that was dating one, and I don't know, I can't even remember her name. I used to know it. And she was Sarah's age, and I don't know how, because they were not going out to teach them English or anything, you know. So, you know, I don't know how they ever connected. That's strange. Can't give you any insight there.
There was never any, I guess, dances or things like that where braceros could...
Well...
Other venues where braceros could meet local girls?
There may have been. Mm-hmm. And I was just younger. I didn't, you know. There probably was, because I can't think how... Because Sarah was quiet. She was a quiet person. And I could imagine that maybe she met Raphael through this other friend, because the other girl that I remember, and I didn't know her that well, but she was a couple years older and I knew who she was, because they were probably seniors in high school when we were sophomores. And she was much more outgoing than Sarah would have been. Can't remember her name at all. And I don't know what happened to it, but I don't think she married a bracero. Mm-hmm. But Sarah, I know, went down and lived with Raphael's folks for a period of time, because her mother was quite concerned that she might, you know, not like it and not be able to adjust. And she probably didn't. That would be my take on it, mm-hmm. that she just couldn't quite adjust.
And Raphael had no interest in staying and working here in Salem?
Didn't seem to, but, you know, he had a pretty good job down there. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I don't know. He probably didn't want to. I don't know. Sarah was, her dad had died some years before. He had, maybe it was multiple sclerosis. And, so he had been an invalid for quite a while. Had a beautiful home. See, I was trying to think. No, when she married him, though, they weren't living out there. I don't know. She always had a nice home and, you know, real nice parents. Mother was really a nice person. Quite conservative. And, I don't think Her mother was a college graduate, but I don't think ever had Spanish or any language. I don't know what she would have taken, but English maybe. I don't know. But anyway, I can't give you any insight. You know, I'm thinking there probably were dances that they had for them. And I probably would have gone if I'd had transportation.
So what did your parents think about you teaching English to these men? Were they concerned?
No, they weren't concerned at all. I guess my parents were progressive or something. No. And they weren't concerned a bit when Pauline and I took off on the Greyhound bus and went to Mexico. I was 19. I often wondered when our daughter got to be that age. Although, we let her... Actually, when she was... it was her junior year, though, I guess, in college. She went down to Guadalajara for a semester. She went to the University of Oregon. And I don't know, trying to think if she had any, you know, back when they started, there was Spanish in junior high. And I'm wondering if she maybe had some Spanish in junior high. I know our son had first year Spanish at Sprague, a lost cause. And he'd come home and he'd tell me that all he got out of a Spanish today was hearing some, like we're telling about things. This teacher would be telling about her episodes of being in Spain or taking a little group somewhere to study Spanish and all of her things that she'd do. So I think his was a lost cause. Anyway, We took our daughter to Mexico with us. It was the beginning of summer vacation, and she went down to Puerto Vallarta. We were a week down there, and then we were a week back at Mazatlan. Well, she stayed the week in Puerto because she had to get back to work at the cannery. And when we first got there, the first thing I did was found our hotel. It had a neat old hotel right on the beach. And you could walk about a block, seemed like a block, block and a half, to the main road that went into town. And I'd ask somebody about, you know, how what the transportation was. And they told me, well, I could wait for a first-class bus that came every hour or something, or just the regular old buses came every 15 minutes. So we went out there and flagged the bus down. We got on, and there were three seats on the bus, but one was like here, and one here. I don't know where our daughter sat. But, of course, she was alone, and I was alone, and my husband was alone. I got off of the bus, and she said, "Mom, don't ever do that to me again. I just felt so out of place." Well, it was the next year. I think she came back. She'd gotten a little Spanish somewhere. But the next year is when she went down and spent that half a year down there. It was kind of an exchange thing that she got through University of Oregon. And she lived with a family. Had a daughter about the same age as ours. And she wrote a first postcard home, and it says, "Mom, you'd be proud of me. I can ride those buses all over the city, and I can even hang on the running board and ride them." But I can remember the first time she really got interested in learning Spanish. We went with a grange group. The farmers always had the granges. And we belonged to one out at North Howell, just the next district from Hazel Green. And our kids belonged to the Junior Grange. And one spring vacation, the Grange group out there had a group going to the Canary Islands. And so I think we got an extra couple days off from school, and the kids did too. They were in junior high. She was 7th grade, and he was, I can't remember what junior high was. 8th grade, no, 7th grade and 9th grade, I think, at that point. And we were talking to some of the merchants someplace, Spanish Morocco, or maybe right there in the Canary Islands, I'm not sure. And they were speaking Spanish to me, and they were talking about her. And she knew that she was being talked about. I mean, they were saying things like, you know, if your daughter were just a few years older, I could sure have her for my wife, and just kidding around. And she said, "What were they saying, Mom? What were they saying?" I said, "You better learn Spanish." So she got a little more interested. Yeah, that was fun.
Going back to the braceros in this community, did you make any friends other than Rafael, or like Rafael, that were friends that you knew well, like you knew where they were from and you knew their story?
You know, I always ask them the different areas that they were from and so forth, but I didn't really zero in on any of them, mm-hmm. because they all were really neat people, you know, and I enjoyed them all. And
how did they treat you? How did they treat you as a young woman coming in to teach them English or to work alongside them?
Just like anybody else. Yeah, I mean, yeah, they just treated me like anybody else. And I wondered later, because, you know, a lot of the people at that time just would have been really, but kind of standoffish or something. But, you know, I grew up going to that elementary that probably half of the kids were Japanese, mm-hmm. and there was never any difference, you know. So
did you feel a kind of shift in what was happening here in Salem because the Japanese were sent to internment?
Oh, and then all of a sudden, that was horrid. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and then all of a sudden you get these new characters.
Oh, well, see, I don't know, there must have been more Mexicans around, because I never felt that suddenly there was this influx. I'm thinking, trying to think, I must have had, I know the Aguilars, see, I was used to them and their big extended family, and Rolando Porras, the Nicaraguan. I don't know, it just seems like they're more around here, but I can't, I guess I can't think of who they were. Mm-hmm. No, I just never noticed any difference. Mm-hmm. And that's probably part of it. My dad was Hungarian, and the mixture, and his parents had come over here, and my mom was English and Scotch. Quite a combination. No, I just don't remember there being any big influx. Mm-hmm. There must have been, you know, if I had spent a lot of time downtown and the town was small enough then, I would have noticed. But I never did, you know. I just didn't. I rode the bus to high school. Would ride the bus home, and yeah.
What the braceros that you had contact with, what did they dress like? Were they wearing work clothes, or did they wear special attire?
Most of them had some sort of work clothes. Mm-hmm. They certainly didn't wear, you couldn't really tell that, like, here's a businessman, there's a doctor, here's a lawyer, mm-hmm. a merchant, a chief. You couldn't really distinguish at all. You could tell um, eventually, when I had more Spanish, I could probably pick up some who maybe had more dialects, more Indian words or something. First, I couldn't tell any difference except the ones who didn't speak any Spanish. You know, I would know they were speaking their Indian dialects.
Mm-hmm. And they usually were in groups so that they were speaking to each other?
That would be mainly when we go to teach English.
Yeah,
I don't remember having any of them on the farm working with them that didn't speak some Spanish. But I do remember there was one young man I really kind of felt sorry because he never knew what those other people were saying. You know, his buddies sitting with him, the Spanish-speaking Mexicans that were there.
And how could you tell he didn't even understand?
Oh, you could tell. I mean, you could tell he was sitting there looking around, trying to figure out what was going on. Yeah. And when we all did the picture things, and you could tell right off, too. If I'd ask him, ¿qué es esto? You know, he would never reply because he didn't know Spanish. That was the obvious thing to me. Or como se dice en español, you know? Spanish? You'd get that look. Just couldn't communicate. I don't know if you realize, but here some years ago, there was a Mexican up, I think somewhere in the Gresham area out of Portland, that was convicted of a murder, I think. And they were about ready to, I don't know if they were ready to execute him or the sentence or what. And somebody figured out that he couldn't speak Spanish. They were speaking Spanish to him, and he didn't know what they were saying through all this legal stuff. And they had found him guilty, and I don't know if he was in prison, but it was the road to life in prison or something like that. And some woman, must have been from the Portland area, figured out, I think she was a lawyer, figured out that he wasn't understanding anything that was being said, and they thought he was just not communicating because they had people talking Spanish to him. And she figured out that he spoke an Indian dialect and he didn't know what was going on at all. And after they got somebody who could speak with him, they found that he was innocent. He wasn't the one that did it at all. So, you know, things like that are scary. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, do you have any more recollections of things that had happened on the farm, incidents? Were braceros ever sick?
Yes. Yes. You've heard about the turistas when you go to Mexico. I had them one time down there, so I know what they were going through. Well, they had the same reaction up here to the water, different amoebic things in our water, and their systems would react the same as when we go and get that. Mm-hmm. And, some of them really, you know, they'd get used to it, but for a few days they'd really be not well. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I've heard you can either even go like in the southern U.S. and get the same thing, you know, different water supplies.
Did any ever suffer accidents, anything like that?
Not where we were or the work that we did, but Nobody ever cut themselves with that machete. That's more than my husband did. He chopped his leg pruning trees here one time. Hit his leg. I had to take him over to Kaiser Permanente.
Do you remember around how many men your father employed?
Well, let's see. I was trying to think. They would take the truck in, and they had two benches on the sides, I remember, with sideboards. Trying to think of our backyard and where they'd, how they'd sit out there. Probably 12 to 15 seems to be about what they'd have. Yeah.
Did the same men work with you for long periods, a month, 2 months?
I think basically they got as much as they could, the same people. And it would be... maybe 4 weeks here, 3 weeks there. It seemed to me like it wasn't just a running block. Because when we didn't have them, I would still get to go and do the Spanish at night with them. And your stomach's growling. I should give you something to eat.
We just ate.
Oh, you just ate. Well, no, it wasn't just a block of 2 months. It would have been to get one job done, and it might have been a pause a week or two, or then several other more weeks, that type of thing.
Just out of curiosity, did they know how to work the crops that your father had? Did they know how to work
you
the berries?
You could teach them right off. That wasn't a problem, as I remember at all. Mm-hmm. No, they were fast learners. You know, I'm thinking of some of these things. And I know we had them do some things I'm not recollecting. But working with the seed crops or something, or the harvesting with our shaker, old-fashioned sieves. People wouldn't relate to that at all today. All that is done by machinery now. that was no problem, teaching them how to do any of that stuff.
Mm-hmm. After you went on your trip to Mexico, you continued on to college.
Mm-hmm.
What did you study and where did you study?
I studied at Willamette University. Spanish, French. I ended up with a Spanish major, a French minor, and after college, the year after I graduated, I got married. He had gone to Willamette a year, maybe 2 years, and then transferred to Oregon State in engineering. And we were married for 18 months, and he died of cancer. He was a veteran, had a lot of amoebic problems from the South Pacific. He was a Marine, and ended up with cancer anyway. So then I went back to Willamette and picked up a teaching certificate, and I took the thing then was that I would need something other than just language, because if you started out in a small town, you would teach quite a few things. So I picked up enough hours of home economics so I could teach it. I never had a home economics class in high school. My life, because on the farm, you learn to do everything. And but that was all right. I got a job, my first job, Spanish at Leslie Junior High here in Salem, but I had to do one English and social studies combination with it. And right before school started that year, the principal and vice principal, I guess, came out. I was living back home at the time on the farm with my parents. They came out to visit about a week before school started and said, "Would you please teach home economics?" And, you know, I asked them why, because they'd hired me for the other. And they said, "Well, because we need a home economics teacher desperately. The one they had, had been there for years, didn't tell them, but she had cancer. And she was very ill. And in fact, I think she died, or else was just very ill and knew that she couldn't go back. But they could get a Spanish teacher from Pendleton. They had him lined up. He wanted to teach in Salem, and they could get him over from Pendleton. So I agreed to do the home economics. I wasn't too anxious about English and social studies. So I did home economics at Leslie Junior High for 6 years, I think. And 6.5 years, yeah, about that. I met my husband and we got married, Cade. And he was, let's see, what was he? He was to teach at Leslie. So I need to move out of Leslie because husband and wife could not teach in the same school then. So I moved to North High and taught Spanish and French. And by then it had been years since I'd had any French. It was, but that worked out nicely. I had an excellent student teacher, and he'd have me explain all the grammar points because he was kind of weak in that, but he'd been a veteran too in the French Morocco.
Okay, hold on. So you were saying?
What was I saying?
About last I heard, Morocco.
Oh.
The French class?
The French class.
Yes.
Because he was an excellent speaker. Mm-hmm. You know. And he delighted in doing the tests, but he loved to have me present the grammar to them. Mm-hmm. And so I got by fine with that. My Spanish classes probably didn't get adequate lesson plans done, but that was fine because I had started doing some night classes also. In fact, I was subbing. I was teaching home ec at Leslie Junior High, but Willamette had called me to sub. No, Salem Public Schools called me to sub for a Spanish teacher in adult education. He was a Willamette prof. And I guess the Willamette guy, although he was basically a French teacher, I think I don't know if I ever had him for Spanish at all. But anyway, he told them to call me and get him to come and sub for him. That's when I met Kay.
Your husband.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a funny experience. I won't bore you with that.
How many children do you have?
Two.
Two?
Boy and a girl. And we started late, so we're like a generation, you know, older than all of our kids' friends' parents. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, my final question to you is going to be, do you think that the Bracero program changed your life in any way?
Well, it was sure a lifesaver to my parents and the farming, probably a lifesaver for me, because it sure made it easier when you didn't have to get up and worry about who are you going to get to help harvest. And that was super. And then I probably would have gone on with Spanish, because I'd kind of gotten oriented that way somehow. Well, through the Aguilars maybe, or some, I don't know. But yeah, being able to work with them and talk with them or sing and hear them singing and hear words, and I could ask them what they meant, and that was great. You know, I meet people even today that I have a lot of Mexican friends in the area, but they're kind of amazed even. You know, I've forgotten half of the vocabulary I've ever known, but they're amazed that I know, you know, just some of the words that are, like when we go to Mexico, and mm-hmm. we were down there last April for a week, and I just love it when I can, you know, kind of immerse yourself in it. Otherwise, I don't use it enough to, well... You saw my big hanging basket out there? That's from my friend Dahlia. They were out last week for dinner, last Friday, I guess, and she came, and she used to work at Egan's nursery, and she's long retired now, although she's 9 years younger than I am. She's still long retired, and she brought me that huge hanging basket that then she gets all their leftover beautiful plants. Yeah, no.
In general, do you remember these men in a positive light or in a negative light?
In a positive light, definitely. Yeah, we never had any negatives. Mm-hmm. We never had anything like what we would get working in the strawberries sometimes with the winos. You know, shouldn't say that, but that's that's what it amounted to. No, we... I think everybody we ever got was very well-mannered and positive to be out there working and enjoying themselves and not grumbling and growling because they were out there. Yeah, it was great.
Well, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.